It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
From the Times and the Sunday Times, this is The Story. I'm Manveen Rana. For the First Minister of Scotland, Humza Yousaf, it was a big moment.
I'm very proud of the Hate Crime Act. We have seen, I'm afraid, not just in the UK, of course Scotland, but right across many parts of the world, it's kind of rising tide of hatred against people because of their protected characteristics.
When the new Scottish law on hate crime came into force on Easter Monday, it was supposed to protect some of the most vulnerable in society.
Scotland, having this hate crime legislation, protecting people, giving them that protection from hatred, while at the same time protecting people in terms of the freedom of expression.
But many critics think the law will stifle freedom of expression. And rather than making Scotland more tolerant, this will make it less so. Leading the charge against it is J.K. Rowling, who's already dared Scottish police to arrest her for a series of social media posts that call trans women men.
We need to be able to have an open conversation about that. The danger is this law makes it more difficult. And that's why J.K. Rowling, so she's done this thread where she set out some of her views that some people would say are hateful. I think some of them are important views that need to be expressed. And she said, go on then, I dare you, arrest me. So she's sort of testing the law, as it were.
Police Scotland have already confirmed that J.K. Rowling will not face prosecution. But with more than 800 hate crimes being reported in just 48 hours, the debate around how the new law will affect free speech is still raging. In Scotland and beyond, where it's already become a new battle line in the global culture wars. The story today: could Scotland's hate crime laws be the beginning of the end for free speech?
My name's Kieran Andrews, and I'm the Scottish political editor for The Times and The Sunday Times.
Kieran, it's not often that Scotland makes global headlines where it's suddenly being talked about by Elon Musk, Joe Rogan.
You see that wild shit that's going on in Scotland where they're targeting comedians for hate crime laws?
Still?
No. Yeah.
It's great. Really?
Please, Scotland, we won't target comedians under new hate crime law. That's what you say now.
Just explain what's been happening.
Yeah, this is the Scottish Government's Hate Crime and Public Order Act, which came into force, ironically, on April the 1st, so on April Fool's Day. The date is apposite. The madness that is circulated online around the legislation itself, it all fits together into one huge controversy that is largely of the Scottish Government's own making.
And give us a sense of the global reaction to this and how it feels like Scotland suddenly on the front line of a global culture war.
Unfortunately, Scotland has led the way when it comes to online culture wars that have spread across the world, from the anonymous trolls that lit up the 2014 independence referendum debate through to the heated exchanges about transgender rights. When it comes to the Hate Crime Act, people have been getting really, really worked up about the idea that it might criminalise free speech. That is something that the proponents of the Act disagree with. They say that as long as the Act is not abused, there's nothing in there that criminalises average free speech. They say that it needs to pass the test of a reasonable person, not considering the language used, for example, by comedians or politicians or general commentators as being likely to stir up hatred. What critics say is that it doesn't matter whether or not a reasonable person sees it this way. There are plenty of unreasonable people who will make hate crime reports maliciously, and just the very reporting and investigation of someone could be punishment enough in itself.
So just take us back a step. What exactly is the Hate Crimes Bill? What does it say and what does it change in terms of the law in Scotland?
The Hate Crime Bill was brought in to effectively strengthen punishments that can be handed out when someone is a victim of a criminal offence and based around their ethnicity or their sexuality or their gender. Whether or not it is clear exactly what constitutes stirring up hatred is the sort of thing that may fall foul of that law.
And are there particular groups that it seeks to protect?
Yes, there are. The law will protect people on the basis of their religion, over their sexual orientation, their age, their transgender identity, and people who are disabled. There has been more controversy around the fact that it doesn't protect women, so there's no hate crime based on misogyny. The Scottish Government said that they'll do a working group on this, but that was promised by Humza Yousaf, now First Minister, but who was Justice Secretary when this bill went through Holyrood. And here we are with the law about to come into force, and we're no further forward with that working group.
And this bill, as you say, has been years in the making. Humza Yousaf was Justice Minister at the time. Was it his initiative, though, or was it Nicola Sturgeon, who was First Minister? Is this one of her sort of key policies?
Everything in the Scottish Government under Nicola Sturgeon was effectively part of Nicola Sturgeon's legacy, because she ran a very tight ship. Things did not get commissioned, did not get off the ground if she wasn't on board with them. Humza Yousaf has spent a lot of his first year as First Minister trying to scrape some of the barnacles off the boat that were left by Nicola Sturgeon. This legislation is one of those barnacles, but he's decided that the ship will sail better with it still attached. He is still very much dogged by Nicola Sturgeon's legacy. However, he has kept her personally close and defended her from all criticism. That makes sense to a degree, because Nicola Sturgeon is still largely popular with SNP members, but it does run the risk for Humza Yousaf that he could just be weighed down by his predecessor.
Just explain why it was sort of such an important policy to Nicola Sturgeon. It was part of a raft of policies that she seemed to be pushing through at the time.
Well, it was, and it connects to the gender reforms that were aimed at making it easier for people to change their gender, which were ultimately thrown out by the UK government.
It's an important part of my responsibility to make life a little bit easier for stigmatised minorities in our country, to make their lives a bit better and to remove some of the trauma that they live with on a day-to-day basis. And I think it is important to do that for the tiny minority of trans people in our society.
Nicola Sturgeon spent a lot of time in office, particularly in her latter days in office, saying that she wanted to really step up protections on people's rights.
Gender reform, making it easier for people in Scotland to change their gender and lowering the legal age from 18 to 16. It has been one of the most divisive debates since the dawn of devolution.
You're a man and I'm a woman.
That's your opinion.
And again, the criticism was that whilst Nicola Sturgeon worked hard to bring in new legislation to aid minority rights, particularly transgender rights, there are people who say that she just didn't do enough to protect women's rights.
And how does Humza Yousaf defend the bill?
Humza Yousaf says two things. One is that its ultimate aims are relatively uncontroversial. He points out that stirring up hatred, that controversial part of the bill, has actually been in force for racial hatred for years in Scotland and has been in force in England and Wales for years as well. He also says, as a Muslim man, that he has experienced an incredible amount of racism and that it is the sort of bill that should be brought forward to protect people from minority backgrounds from suffering any of the abuse that he or others have suffered, and that anything that can act as a deterrent to that should be welcomed and should be brought forward.
This bill is about protecting people against that rising tide of hatred we see far too prevalent in our society nowadays. So unless your behaviour is threatening or abusive and intends to stir up hatred, then you have nothing to worry about in terms of the new offences being created.
From the moment this policy was announced, there has been a lot of controversy and a lot of opposition to it. Just talk us through the opposition it's faced. What are the arguments against it?
The arguments in the main are that this bill limits what people may be able to say and may lead to vexatious complaints being made over disagreements about viewpoints on the world. The proponents of the bill say that it would never be criminal, but we have seen lots and lots of instances where vexatious complaints are made about politicians, about prominent public figures, and the worry is that people who disagree online predominantly, and a lot of this is very online, will end up being investigated by the police, will end up with some form of record because they've been investigated for an alleged hate crime. People worry about closing down free speech and free debate in Scotland.
For fear that they'll fall foul of the law.
Absolutely, or even just the fear that they'll have to deal with being investigated by the police and people will find out about that and that people will then think that there's no smoke without fire.
Can you sort of give us an example of, you know, scenarios where this might now be applied?
One of the concerns that has been raised, particularly by feminist groups, is that if a woman was to state that sex is binary and were to say that somebody who is a transgender woman is not a woman or their sex is not female, even though their gender identity may be, there are concerns that this could lead to certainly complaints under the new law, and people are concerned about at what point fair comment becomes a criminal hate speech.
Are you concerned that this law may be weaponised?
I'm certain that it will be, and that is what the women that I work with in Scotland are very worried about. The fact is that there have been trans rights groups that have for many years been saying that to call a man who identifies as a woman a man is hateful. There are lots and lots of people who think that stating biological reality and legal reality is hateful, so we're absolutely certain that lots of those people will be reporting us.
One of the controversial side issues to this, and this is not directly related to the legislation, but it does show how it could be abused, is the case recently of Murdo Fraser, a Conservative MSP who was reported to the police for what was termed hate speech by an activist when he was commentating on the Scottish Government's gender policies.
You know, this raises all sorts of serious issues around freedom of speech because my tweet was not directed at any individual. It was a criticism of Scottish government policy on gender issues. And, you know, are we really in a place where opposition politicians criticising government policy are now treated as being guilty of hate incidents? That's not where we should be in a liberal democracy.
The police threw that out instantly, didn't contact Murdo Fraser to even tell him there had been a complaint. But under Police Scotland's complaints recording system, that was recorded as a hate incident. Now, the person who made the complaint received a notification from the police that this was not a hate crime, but it has been recorded as a hate incident, and they used that to then make a complaint about Murdo Fraser to Scotland's Ethical Standards Commissioner, who also threw out that complaint. You can see how these things can spiral out of control. If people think that that's how you can treat making these complaints, there's no reason to think that it may not happen to teachers, to sports coaches, to anyone else who rely on background checks from the police and instead may end up with a lot of potentially vexatious hate incidents hanging around them.
So it could have a really chilling effect on free speech if people think they could end up with incidents against their name in some form, and this could come back to haunt their reputation. I mean, tell us, who were the main voices of opposition?
The Scottish Conservatives were the main voices of opposition, but they were joined throughout the bill by various people who represented writers, who represented journalists, who represented comedians, who all voiced serious concerns about the knock-on effects of the bill on free speech. The flip side is actually most other parties in Holyrood supported this. The SNP, Labour, the Liberal Democrats and the Scottish Greens all backed the legislation as it went through Holyrood. There are not many people, and there are not many reasonable people, to use the phrase of the Hate Crime Act, who would think that there's anything wrong with toughening up sentences for people who commit crimes that are motivated by bigotry. The difficulty is whether that legislation has been drawn up tightly enough, whether it has been thought through clearly enough, and whether its unintended consequences are going to end up so great that a laudable aim ends up undermined by the very bill that was supposed to make things better. People are concerned about at what point fair comment becomes a criminal hate speech.
Coming up, how did the debate about a law in Scotland become a new front in the global culture war? That's in just a moment. This weekend, if you're a Time subscriber, you can catch the latest episode of Inside the Newsroom, our look at life here at the Times. It's our new behind-the-scenes series on Apple Podcasts, just for subscribers, on the Stories of Our Times feed. If you want to find out more, visit thetimes.co.uk/bonuspodcasts.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
The new hate crime law in Scotland has sparked a furore. And it's not just because of what the law says, it's also how it's been presented, with one particularly badly judged PR campaign and promotional video from Police Scotland causing a lot of anger.
You might know this thing here. It's the hate monster. When you're feeling insecure, when you feel angry, he'll be there, feeding off the emotions. Getting bigger and bigger till he's weighing you down.
Just tell us the sort of criticisms there have been of that.
The hate monster has been a...
How is that going down in Scotland? I mean, what are you hearing from people?
I think it's fair to say the hate monster has not been Police Scotland or the Scottish Government's biggest PR coup. There have been a few issues with it, mostly what people see as a slightly patronising tone and, ironically, a perceived targeting of one community. The hate monster speaks almost in a slightly patronising West of Scotland working class accent.
He'll make you want to have a go at somebody. A neighbour, somebody on the street, on a night out, security guy on the door, somebody in the chippy, your taxi driver. He'll make you want to vent your anger just because folk look or act different for you.
The accompanying blurb on the Police Scotland website about it talks about the people most likely to commit hate crimes are young men from socially excluded background. The suggestion that effectively poor white guys are going to commit hate crimes has meant that there's been a big backlash about Police Scotland, according to the critics, being patronising and targeting certain groups or sending a nod and a wink to Scotland's middle classes that, don't worry, we're not after you, we're just after the boys for the schemes.
Wow, so assuming that hate crimes are only committed by the poor.
Yeah, absolutely. It's watch out for those louts swigging cans of cheap lager on their way to the football. They're the ones we're going for, not the people in the big houses.
Kieran, a lot of the difficulty around this new law will be in how it's actually enforced. You mentioned the PR disaster on behalf of the government and the police with this video that they've released. Is there a sense, though, that the police are actually prepared for policing this new law? Do they understand when to enforce it and when it shouldn't be applied?
Well, Police Scotland had effectively been the reason that this law didn't come into force earlier. They said there was simply not enough time to train up officers. Since then, we've heard that officers have only had a couple of hours online training to prepare themselves for it, which may not fill people with lots of confidence about already busy and overworked officers being in a position to fully understand the nuances of every hate crime complaint. The other thing that has drawn criticism is the promise that every single hate crime complaint will be investigated by the police. Now, that may sound uncontroversial, but it's come at a time where Police Scotland has said that it's going to roll out a pilot that took place in the northeast of Scotland across the whole country, which means that actually a series of relatively lower level crimes like house break-ins, car break-ins, these kind of crimes where there's no CCTV or witnesses will actually no longer be investigated. There is quite a bit of frustration, quite a bit of anger at the idea that if somebody smashes in the window of your car and steals the contents, but there's no CCTV, that won't be looked at. But if there's been a tweet, the police will be making sure that's followed through to the bitter end.
And Kieran, another element of the way this will be enforced that's raised eyebrows is the use of reporting centres, and particularly the slightly surprising location of some of them. Now, I hadn't come across reporting centres before. Just explain what they are, how they work, and why they're proving to be so controversial here.
Reporting centres are places that are there for people who may not feel comfortable going into a police station to go and report specifically hate crimes and feel safe and secure. They have proven controversial for a couple of reasons. People can go in and report the crimes anonymously, which again feeds into everything we've been talking about around the potential for vexatious complaints. But secondly, the locations are pretty quirky, to say the least, of some of the reporting centres. They include a sex shop in Glasgow, a mushroom farm, and in one case, a bus stop.
I mean, that is unexpected.
It's not where you would expect to go in necessarily and report crimes. And again, to come back to that juxtaposition of policing in Scotland at the moment, these reporting centres are being promoted more and more, while at the same time, local police stations have been closing as Police Scotland tries to save money.
And I suppose, ultimately, the difficulty with enforcing this law will be on how it's interpreted. It talks about threatening and abusive language, which, you know, everyone will have a slightly different measure of. And stirring up hatred again feels like it could be quite subjective. Have the government sort of given a sense of how high the threshold will be for prosecution? I mean, if you're being hateful or abusive to a sibling, are you in trouble? Like, you know, at what point does it become something where the law has to step in?
The government's view on this is that a reasonable person, which again in itself is quite subjective, would need to find that the language being used is not just a hateful, but again is likely to incite violence. So the threshold is reasonably high, but again, I suppose we'll only know whether that works if or when we see cases come through Scotland's court system and we see the views taken by judges in Scotland as to what they make of cases brought forward by prosecutors under the new law.
Another controversial part of this law, which will again sort of make the enforcement quite problematic, is that this law doesn't recognise the difference between public and private discourse. Just explain how that might play out.
This is the concern that anything discussed around the dinner table could fall foul of the law, and that it would not just be public statements that could be seen to incite hatred, but rather private gatherings where people express views that could be seen as stirring up hatred. Again, the Scottish Government has said this is not something that would become routine, that there's a very high threshold to be met. But people have become concerned about a growing creep into people's personal lives and thoughts. If views expressed that may ordinarily be seen as a robust discussion could be weaponized and used to make complaints and turned into hate speech. When you combine that with the anonymous reporting centres and some of the other controversies around this bill, some people do think that there's almost a snooper's charter emerging.
Was this sort of a big part of Nicola Sturgeon's ambition to modernise Scotland, you know, her vision for what it should be? And how has that played out?
Nicola Sturgeon had a big vision. She wanted to be seen as being on the right side of history. That went across a lot of the laws that she brought forward. It was something that her critics said blinded her to the ultimate effects of some of those laws. And potentially it is one of the things that we'll look back on as her legacy, and there'll be question marks over whether doing what she absolutely thought was the right thing perhaps didn't end up quite as she had intended. But ultimately, this is Humza Yousaf who's bringing forward this law, who steered it through Parliament, who's a staunch defender of it. So any legacy from this particular law or this outlook goes beyond Nicola Sturgeon.
And how damaging could this be for Humza Yousaf?
Well, it's another thing on the kind of pile-up that Humza Yousaf is facing just now. He's not had his troubles to seek since becoming First Minister. This law in and of itself is unlikely to tip the balance for him. But when things are going badly as a politician, sometimes you just can't catch a break. And it's one more thing that Humza Yousaf has to go out and defend rather than going out and getting on the front foot whenever he wants to try and set the political weather as First Minister.
Kieran, as somebody who lives there, what does this law tell us about modern Scotland?
It tells us, I think, that modern Scotland, certainly modern political Scotland, is increasingly descending into culture wars, that we cannot have a piece of legislation that is supposed to be pretty simple on the face of it and make the lives of people who suffer horrendous abuse simply because of who they are. We can't have laws that are supposed to make their lives a little bit better without them being so badly drafted, being so vague and being seized upon by ideologues from all sides of the debate, that they don't just turn into a massive scrap that are seized upon by bad actors, that are seized upon by people with their own agendas, and weaponized to the extent that there are plenty of people who would say at the end of the overall process, they don't actually feel much safer, whether they were for or against the law when it was first brought forward.
And Kieran, this law comes at a time when there is a global conversation taking place, really, about free speech and whether rules or attitudes and norms are shutting down open debate. That's partly why we've seen Elon Musk and Joe Rogan and figures like that talking about it. They don't often pick up on legal changes in Scotland. How will this law, do you think, shift the dial on that?
Well, it's already shifted the dial. In some ways, it doesn't really matter how the law works because, as you say, Elon Musk and Joe Rogan have made their, it must be said, pretty wildly inaccurate comments about the law and its effect. They've already used it. It served its purpose for them. It doesn't matter whether it goes on to work in practice. The only way it can really inform any of this debate now is if indeed it does fail, in which case the same characters, the same bad actors will come back and use its failures or its controversies for their own political ends again. It comes back to that point about saying something slightly depressing about public life, not just in Scotland, but in the wider Western world just now, that we can't have a grown-up debate about the rights and wrongs, ins and outs, and whether something that was brought forward with good intentions works in practice without it being hijacked by people who have their own agendas to chase.
That was Kieran Andrews, Scottish political editor at The Times and The Sunday Times. And you can find all of our ongoing coverage of the new law at thetimes.co.uk with a subscription. And if you want to listen back to an earlier podcast we did looking at the controversy around Nicola Sturgeon's gender self-identification law, then we'll put a link in the description to this episode. Today's producer was Chris Wade, ably assisted by Edith Rousselot. The executive producer was Kate Ford, and sound design and theme tune were by Mal Lasetto. If you'd like to get in touch with us about anything you've just heard or anything you'd like to hear in the future on the podcast, then do drop us a line to thestory@thetimes.co.uk. Thanks for listening. See you tomorrow.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.